from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Monday meets Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Looking forward to talking to him in a few minutes. Before we get to that, though, a lot of UGA recruiting news, and we'll look forward to kind of sifting through all this and finding out what it means. Georgia taking a commitment this weekend from an offensive lineman, a guy that we've talked about a few times here before on Dog Nation Daily. It's Xavier Truss, a offensive tackle from Rhode Island. It's, right there on the doorstep of being a top 100 player in the country. He's a four-star prospect. But the big takeaway, no pun intended, about Xavier Truss is he's gigantic. I mean, I don't know how else to say this. 6'7" and a half, 350 pounds. This is a huge, huge offensive lineman. And when Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, when he and I have kind of talked about this stuff in the past, I mean, that's the one thing that we center in on. And we actually did some of this even on Friday's show. That for Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman, this becomes about a priority. And for these guys, the priority is not necessarily the highest rated recruit. For them, the priority is highly rated recruits who were just big. Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman, they just like big offensive linemen. And for Georgia in 2017, I think for the most part, the proof was in the pudding. You saw a big offensive line push around open holes. It enabled Jim Chaney to call the plays that he wanted to call, as opposed to in 2016, where, let's face it, this play calling was a bit curious at times, and part of that was about an offensive line that the Georgia coaches didn't necessarily trust. But bigger has been better for the Georgia offensive line thus far. And if you want to go back to when really Kirby planted his flag as a recruiter, it was not the number one class of 2018 in a lot of ways. And by the way, you see Xavier Truss there on your screen if you're watching with the announcement that he's coming to the University of Georgia. But so many of these guys have sort of made this official lately, Truss kind of putting it out there on social media that he's 100% committed to UGA. And certainly there have been some movement in this direction for a while when it comes to Xavier Truss. But if you want to go back in time to 2017 here for a moment, that's when really Kirby Smart really planted his flag as a UGA recruiter. As I said, you did have the number one class in the country for 2018, but back in 2017, Georgia had the number three class, according to 24/7 Sports Composite. And if you look at the total overall scores, and I'm not great at math, I'm not even sure sometimes how all that's tabulated necessarily, but when you look at that stuff, what Georgia did in 2017, a lot of recruiting experts will tell you was good enough to be a number one class in some years. So it was a great success for Georgia in its 2017 class, and a lot of big offensive linemen, really good offensive linemen, were a big part of that. Andrew Thomas was a starter on last year's offensive line, was in that class. Isaiah Wilson, who may be a starter in this year's class, was a part of that signing class of 2017. And Kirby, when talking about how impressed he was with those guys, he mentioned then the same thing that Xavier Truss brings to Georgia right now. That size quotient, that big stature. Kirby and Sam Pittman like that, and they got another one with Xavier Truss. Here's an example about how much Kirby does like this, with also a slight caveat at the end.
I think it's exciting anytime you get a group like that. I certainly am very impressed with the stature of those guys. They've got to do a good job of controlling that between now and arrival here, because only one of them's here right now. So those guys can't get too big. They've got to do a good job of getting in shape. They've got to learn quickly. We got to do a good job developing those guys.
Listen, the most interesting stuff that Kirby Smart ever says is sort of the context in between the lines of what he actually says. And I'm sure it probably drives him crazy that people like me kind of want to, do that. But it is true that Kirby Smart right there, that meaning to, I think, sort of gives you the two big viewpoints that he has on offensive linemen. Stature is good. Stature is impressive. Bigger is better, but watch out that you don't get too big. And I'm sure for a lot of the guys that signed as part of that 2017 class, when they arrived at Georgia, and a lot of them, it was a summer situation when they got to UGA, I'm sure they were shocked to find out that the thing that made me great when I first got here, all of a sudden now, Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman and a heavy dose of Scott Sinclair, the strength and conditioning coach, all of a sudden now they're telling me I'm too big. Hey, be big. If you're not big enough, you can't come to UGA. But once you get here, make sure you don't get too big. And so I'm sure Xavier Truss will hear some of the same kind of stuff. But if you're not 6'7" and a half, 350 pounds, you're not walking through that door. It's sort of a weird irony in a lot of ways that you almost have to be too big to get through the door to actually be able to be invited through the door when it comes to a Georgia with its recruiting. But, as Kirby Smart's going to say here, though, go back to the spring when there was the thought of Isaiah Wilson maybe emerging as the starter at right tackle, and a guy also in a lot of the same way, cut from the same kind of cloth, as Xavier Truss, Ben Cleveland, maybe starting at right guard. Here are two guys in tandem on the right side of that Georgia offensive line, maybe big enough to block out the sun. One day, Xavier Truss here at Georgia will have sort of the same kind of stuff said about him. But as Kirby says, you know, it's more about the fight within the offensive lineman than the size that he brings to the table. Here's a little more of Kirby Smart trying to, you know, walk the fine line, the balance of, hey, a big offensive lineman's good, but you got to also go out there and show you can fight as well. Here's Kirby.
Size doesn't excite me. What's inside that helmet does. You know, the first time I saw Isaiah Wynn, I didn't exactly get excited. But I was pretty disappointed when he left. So it was not a matter of how they look all the time. It's a lot more about how they play. And I guess if you asked every defensive lineman that Isaiah faced in the season at SEC, they would say that Isaiah Wynn was one of the fiercest competitors, physical guys. Our defense line didn't want to go against him. They love going against Ben and Isaiah Wilson, you know, so they can get up under him. So it's not a matter of size alone. I think the size obviously gives you the ability to stay in front of the quarterback, keep people off, but your bend and your flexibility and the power you create is a lot more important than your size. So those two guys, they're in position battles. I mean, just like a lot of guys out there. There's no starting offensive line in my mind. There's some good young players out there that are competing with older players.
So, I mean, that's obviously a warning to the media of, hey, don't assume just because a guy's big, he's going to walk his way into a starting position at UGA. And we certainly understand that, but we understand that some of the things that Kirby Smart initially liked and Sam Pittman initially liked about Ben Cleveland and about Isaiah Wilson are some of the same things they're going to like about Xavier Truss. There is pretty clearly a philosophy in place at Georgia. You know, Kirby talks about winning your box, being bigger and more physical than the guy that you're competing with. And if you've got 11 guys who are essentially doing some version of that, both on offense and defense, you're going to win the lion's share of your games. And when you bring in guys like Xavier Truss, even if he's not the five-star offensive lineman that may have even been in your own state, but there's something to be said for bigger being better, and that seems to be the philosophy that Georgia's occupying when it comes to these offensive linemen. The Xavier Truss commitment, another example of that, and good job by Sam Pittman by going out and getting another highly rated offensive lineman for this Georgia program. But that was not the only recruiting news of the weekend here. John Reese Plumlee, who is, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite team ranking, sort of listed as an athlete, but for Georgia, they are looking at him as a quarterback. He is from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and as he made official on Twitter this weekend, John Reese Plumlee committing to UGA. He says it's been a journey full of blessings. He gives out a list of thank yous, including to God there, and you see him on, if you're watching on video right now, you see him with the Georgia uniform on, the black jersey with the number 10, the old Eric Zier number, ironically, and the Georgia helmet there. That's John Reese Plumlee, a guy that I won't pretend to know a lot about. I did think that Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com had a pretty interesting description of, you know, kind of who he is as an athlete. And he's a really pretty interesting profile of an athlete here. This is a two-sport star, also a baseball player, and a guy that athletically can do a lot of things on the football field as well. But he gets a chance to come here at Georgia, compete for the quarterback position. He has said he doesn't shy away from that kind of competition. And for a lot of Georgia fans, I think this 2019 quarterback recruiting is in a lot of ways playing out the way that the 2018 cycle played out before Georgia knew that it was going to get Justin Fields, or at least before Justin Fields made it official that he was coming to UGA. You remember around this time a year or so ago when Georgia was kind of throwing a lot of offers out there, and there's been some of that with Georgia this cycle as well. You know, at one point it was Ryan Helinski that you know, UGA had some interest with, and it's been some other guys. You know, it's another one of those deals where it's just been a lot of quarterbacks seemingly connected to Georgia. Georgia at least having some minor flirtations with a lot of these quarterbacks before apparently finally landing on John Reese Plumlee. Not a great position of need for UGA at the top end because of the presence of Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, but crucial in the back end because Stetson Bennett, the would have been third string quarterback, has decided to transfer. Now, when it comes to all this stuff with Georgia making sense of all these quarterbacks who've seemingly been in and out of the turnstiles there in Athens over the last few weeks, well, Jeff Sintel explained to us about a year ago what it's like when you see a lot of different quarterbacks extended offers from UGA, a lot of different quarterbacks seemingly getting some interest from the Dogs. Jeff Sintel kind of explained to us what all of this means. Here's a little more from Jeff.
You have to throw out those offers like fishing lures. And what happens is you throw out the offer, and then if the kid is receptive, he starts communicating, you have a really good first date, so to speak, and then the young man with an offer comes to Georgia and visits, then Georgia can start building the block to the relationship that way. And for a lot of times, they're trying to get in where some other school's already gotten quite cozy. But a lot of times, these kids won't come visit without the offer or without the promise of, hey, we want to see you, we want to get to know you, and if you come, there's a pretty good chance you'll get the offer. So it's almost like Georgia just kind of treats that as a sales lead to kind of get in the door and then start working on a prospect.
So that's a sort of a pretty good explanation from Jeff of kind of how we've gotten to this place we are this summer, where much like a year ago, Georgia talking to a lot of quarterbacks coming to the UGA campus, and finally, as I said, arriving here on John Reese Plumlee, a guy that, once again, I'm no expert on, but the one thing that I do feel like all of us like for that 2019 class, adding Xavier Truss, a player that around here we know a little bit more about, another four-star prospect. Reese Plumlee, at least in terms of his status as an athlete, rates as a four-star prospect. I mean, this is a situation with Georgia where it's set a high standard for the program. You don't see the three-star names coming into the UGA class the way that you do at a lot of other programs. This is Kirby Smart still recruiting on an incredibly high level. Dog fans love weekends with busy UGA recruiting news. They got some of that here this weekend, and not only was it busy with a lot of news, but the news seems to be good and seems to be more momentum building here for another top-rated 2019 class. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we're glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, you can watch us on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube pages. We're live on the Dog Nation Twitter feed. That's always a lot of fun. We're on the radio with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're in podcast form wherever podcasts can be found. The Android devices, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud.com. We post the show at the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad that you have found Dog Nation Daily today, presented by Marco's Pizza. And, of course, Marco's invites you to say hello to everyday value at Marco's. How about two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each? A great deal, great offer, great chance for you to take advantage of that. Every store, every day, it's the Italian way at participating locations. And when they say the Italian way, they really mean it. You know, it's that Giammarco family recipe when it comes to the sauce. It's those three cheeses blended together on the authentic Italian crust. I just love Marco's Pizza. I am so proud to have them as a part of Dog Nation Daily. And I love the line, say hello to Primo. Well, at Marco's Pizza, you get a chance to do just that. We're going to get Chip Towers here coming up in just a couple of moments. He does a great job covering the dogs for DogNation.com. And we'll talk to him about a number of subjects. Before we get to that, though, you know, one of the things I've been doing here over the course of the last couple of weeks is kind of looking in on some of the major national outlets and their opinion of UGA and how it kind of compares to what we think around here. And in some cases, we feel like the national media may be getting it wrong. In some cases, the national media may be kind of zeroing in on an important subject. I think the latest piece from ESPN may be an example of the latter. I think most Georgia fans would agree that on the list of concerns for the 2018 season, this would certainly rank as a reasonable concern. Alex Scarborough from ESPN.com writing, this is a part of that series that I cite from time to time, preseason top 25, sort of issues facing each of these top 25 teams, biggest concern, biggest question mark. Here's what ESPN, the writer Alex Scarborough, says is the biggest question mark for UGA here. He says, it's going to be a bunch of fresh, unproven faces at linebacker this season in Athens. Replacing Roquan Smith in the middle of the defense is the top priority, of course. But don't forget about outside linebacker, where Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy are both gone. That's Alex Scarborough writing for ESPN.com. I think his point here is spot on. I think that replacing the departed linebackers is the biggest issue. But with all due respect to Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy, I think that they are slightly easier to replace, not because they weren't great players, they were both outstanding, but because of what's waiting in the wings. DeAndre Walker, Walter Grant in particular, the incoming freshman here. It's a little bit easier, I think, to replace the linebackers on the outside because of the talent that UGA has. There is no next Roquan Smith right now. Now, there may be one eventually. Maybe somebody grows into one, but for now, it's a committee of people who are going to have to fill the void that Roquan Smith left behind. And for what it's worth, when he joined us recently on Dog Nation Daily, he talked about some of those guys that may be stepping into his shoes and trying to give UGA what Roquan did such a good job of giving the Dogs in 2017. Here he is.
There's a lot of special guys back there right now. I'm looking for a lot of competition to be going on this upcoming spring because all those guys have great skill sets. From Nate Trez, he's one of the leaders of the linebacker room. Then you have guy like Tate Crowder, Monty Rice, then, you know, Jaden McBride. So it's a lot of guys there, man, that has a chance to definitely make some plays this upcoming year. So I'm definitely thinking it'll be a rotation or anything like that because all those guys have a special skill set.
Roquan says it's going to be a lot of guys. I think most of us agree. For now, it's a committee that's going to be asked to replace Roquan. And Roquan said the advice he'd give the guys looking to be the next Roquan at UGA. Here's more of Roquan.
The only thing I would say is just try your best in everything that you do. Don't take anything for granted and, you know, take advantage of every opportunity because not the next one is never promised. And you never know what's in store for you. So just always make the best of everything. Don't take anything. Learn everything you can while you can.
So listen, the bottom line for me is I think ESPN's right about this. Georgia's a good team, but even good teams have concerns for the Dogs. Replacing those linebackers is the biggest one. All right, we got plenty more coming up for you later on. But for now, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, hope you enjoyed Chip Towers.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
As we get rolling here with Chip Towers on this Monday, Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Chip, let me just say to you, happy Father's Day. I know you're a father two times over, and I hope you had a great chance to enjoy yourself here over the course of the weekend, and certainly welcome to our program here today.
Yeah, you too, Brandon. Father's Day is wonderful. It's interesting. I don't think Father's Day is nearly as big a deal as Mother's Day, and rightly so. But it was a pretty big deal for me. I had a good time and enjoyed it. Hope you did too.
Yeah, I really did, Chip. I certainly did. It was a great time. A hot summer day, but a lot of fun nonetheless. So we were talking before you joined us. You know, one of the things I like to do here is kind of look at the national perspective of UGA. I like to compare what we're sort of saying around here, especially the Dog fans that watch or listen to the show each and every day, to the national media who's kind of viewing all this from 10,000 feet. Chip, as you know, sometimes this is stuff we'll agree with. Sometimes this is stuff that's maybe a little different than what my perspective would be. But recent ESPN piece and talking about Georgia's biggest concern, I really agree with this. I mean, listen, there are obviously a few things you could mention here, but how does Georgia replace its linebackers, Roquan Smith in particular? I can certainly understand why a national outlet would sort of pay attention to that as a big question facing UGA. Now, I think that replacing offensive line, or I should say outside linebackers, maybe a little easier just given the talent that's at Georgia in those positions, both on the roster now and incoming freshmen. But finding another Roquan or finding someone even match part of the stats that Roquan brought to the table, that's not an easy task for Georgia, is it?
No, it's not. And all of us who watched every game last year, you know, realizes what an incredible impact Roquan Smith made, you know, not just on making tackles and making great plays, but also getting outside and turning plays inside and just, you know, reading and reacting and affecting the game. And, you know, I agree with, I think what I caught you were saying there a little bit, you know, inside is a little bit more of a concern than outside. I do think Georgia's not just recruited well at outside linebacker, but extremely well, you know, really through the roof when you look at the level of players. And generally those guys can get on the field and be effective quicker, an outside linebacker, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, you're playing one half of the field. The difficulty on inside linebackers is there's just so much that you have to read between run and pass, left and right. Everybody nowadays with the spread stuff is trying to deceive you in that regard, and that's where Roquan was just unbelievable. I mean, couldn't fool it, you know. I mean, you'd run up, like teams like Auburn that run all that misdirection counter stuff. You just couldn't fool the guy.
Yeah.
And so that's instinct and stuff that you just don't know. Now, I mean, I think Georgia has some great candidates, you know, to that end. You know, Monty Rice and certainly Nate McBride have been waiting in the wings. They've been recruited just for this purpose. But you just don't know, you know, till it's their game, you know. And I say this all the time. I know I've said it on your show, Brandon, but, you know, at the end of the day, it took Roquan a while, too. You know,
yeah.
It's just a difficult position on the inside. So, yeah, I think that's a major concern for Georgia. And there are concerns, you know, throughout the lineup. You know, we're putting an awful lot of faith in some really young guys on the offensive line, though I do believe it's a general upgrade there. Secondary, you're losing a couple of guys in Aaron Davis. And Dominic Sanders just played so many football games. So many football games. But again, I think you got good people stepping in there, and that's just the beauty and the beast of college football. You know, it's just that constant ingress and egress and rotation of talent. And, you know, there's some critical spots Georgia's going to have young players come through in that regard this year.
Well, let's talk some more about the secondary here for a moment, because I think most people would say, you know, those starters look pretty good, even though it's no Aaron Davis anymore, no Dominic Sanders anymore. I think there's a high level of excitement about J.R. Reed here, DeAndre Baker, maybe a first-round pick, Richard LeCount moving into a bigger role. I think most UGA fans are pretty eager for that. But then you still got some question about the star position, some question about the other cornerback position. And then, Chip, you know, given the academic situation with Nab Joseph, the injury situation with Devod Wilson, all of a sudden that second group of defensive backs, that's completely up in the air right now, is it not?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's not like, again, that this, you know, entire situation caught Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker by surprise. They knew this was coming. But, you know, at the same time, there's some guys they needed to come through that haven't really come through to this point. You know, D'Angelo Gibbs was one of them. You know, that was a natural guy at this point, a sophomore, you know, that was expected to step in at either star or safety. You know, we don't, at this very moment, you know, we're not 100% sure, you know, what his status is. You know, Trey Bishop's got a situation going on right now. We don't know how it's going to come out. A lot of other guys, you know, Amir Speed, these kind of guys that, were recruited last year. You know, we're still waiting to see. Are they going to be everything that we thought that they were? Eric Stokes, those kind of guys, and then of course the guys that you recruited this year that you're talking about. I mean, I don't think there's been a more anticipated arrival than what Georgia's had in Tyson Campbell.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy that man, he was recruited for this express purpose, and you know, Tyreek McGee and the other guys playing that other cornerback spot. You know, you can't fault them. They played a lot of ball last year and played, you know, at a pretty high level most of the time. But, you know, this guy is what a cornerback, a elite college cornerback is supposed to look like. And, again, it's a difficult position to come in and play well right away. You know, there's just so much to read, so much to understand. But if he's, you know, everything that everybody seems to think he is, you know, Georgia could get an immediate impact, you know, from him back there this season.
Well, speaking as a fan, here's one of the things that kind of concerns me about the Georgia secondary is that while a lot of the media people will say, oh, this is a good secondary because it has two what are thought of as being really good players in DeAndre Baker and J.R. Reed, you know, Chip, when it comes to the defensive secondary, that's the one spot where if you do have a weak link, and I'm not saying that Georgia will, but if it does, if it has some trouble finding a star or if it has some trouble establishing a cornerback on the other side of DeAndre Baker, then Georgia's going to face some really good quarterbacks this season. Already Drew Locke's probably a first-round pick. Jake Bentley, you know, is getting some due attention. Jared Stidham's probably a first-round pick. I think the Joe Burrow transfer to LSU is going to be very interesting. You're talking about some quarterbacks who are going to have potentially the capabilities of finding and exploiting a weakness if Georgia's secondary were to have one.
Listen, that's why I think Georgia, you know, everybody talks about Georgia's schedule and how favorable it is. But the one thing that really concerns me in that regard is those two quarterbacks that Georgia's going to face in the first month and the two Columbias. You know, and I can promise you, you know, that they're not going to be throwing at DeAndre Baker. They're going to be throwing the other way. And it's not that hard to, you know, I guess this is what they do. This is what every offense does. It's what they do, you know, every week is preparing for teams and all offseason, quite frankly, is, you know, game plan for a team. And they're looking around. They're saying, all right, where are the weak links? That's what we're going to attack. And that's what they're thinking. But, you know, they don't know what some of these, you know, redshirt freshmen, guys that only played special teams, and then certainly incoming freshmen like Tyson Campbell. That's why it can be such a benefit if you have a guy like that who comes through in a big way. So, you know, it's the great you know, point counterpoint of college football. And I promise you, I mean, it's being considered already. I mean, you know, South Carolina is probably deep into an idea of what their game plan is going to be for Georgia. And I promise part of it's going to be attack that corner opposite DeAndre Baker.
I'm a fan of old movies. I like the line from the old movie The Godfather about Michael settling all family business, and it certainly seemed for Georgia in 2017. That's what Kirby Smart did, you know, got some revenge against some loss of the 2016 season. And, yeah, as we mentioned on Friday, there may be one sort of issue still lingering out there. The fact that Georgia Tech has actually beaten Georgia two times in a row here in Athens, and that game obviously returns to Sanford Stadium this November. And my guess is that probably ends up being a little motivation for UGA once that game gets played. You know, fans probably talking about that a bit more here of, you know, Georgia fans don't like the idea of Tech coming into Sanford Stadium and winning. And my guess is there may be some extra motivation, at least on the part of UGA fans, to see Georgia sort of answer that emphatically come November.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talk about those national scribes, and there's probably not many of them sitting there running their finger down Georgia's schedule and putting a big red circle around Georgia Tech at the end of the year. But I can promise you the Georgia Bulldogs are. And, you know, all you had to do was see the reaction at the end of last year's game at Georgia Tech. You know, Georgia had so much on the line and you know, were clearly the better team going into that. But there was some real rejoicing going on in that locker room after Georgia beat Georgia Tech, and that's always going to be a special game, that, you know, not just for the fans, and certainly older fans, you know, will still tell you that's the biggest game, it's the only one that matters, it matters more than all the rest, but it's a big deal in state as well, and, you know, Georgia's got to take care of business, you got to hold serve at home, and they haven't done that the last couple of times, and that's really messed them up in terms of the postseason and where they ended up. They can't afford any such trip up with the kind of stuff they're playing for, you know, this season and last season.
We had the college football writer Pete Futak on the show on Thursday. Chippy writes for College Football. He actually owns, I guess, collegefootballnews.com. Mm-hmm. And he was talking in his UGA preview about how it's kind of a new era for UGA fans because of having been in the playoff and being that close to a national championship. Now it's one of those things from here on out in this Kirby Smart era. It's going to be sort of a national championship or bust mentality on the part of UGA fans, and that the season can maybe feel less fun because you've got pressure to win every game, and any loss is going to be sort of a, you know, magnified sense of importance. Have you sensed this change in UGA fans, that all of a sudden that the expectation level has greatly risen just given the success of 2017?
Well, you know, I don't know about the fans as much. I mean, I certainly have sensed it. You know, I mean, they're already making their plans for the SEC championship game this fall, and you know, where the college football playoffs are going to take them. But, you know, this is something that Kirby Smart embraces. I mean, he knows it. He wants that to be the expectation. He wants that pressure. He wants the players to feel the pressure. He wants them to feel it in the offseason. You know, I mean, he said it right at the end of the national championship game. You know, we're not going anywhere. And so, you know, that is the expectation. And they've embraced it, and, you know, it's up to the rest of us to sort of hold them to that. You know, I mean, there's no, Kirby has a lot, you know, people have a lot of attitudes about, you know, the way he is, the way he comports himself with regard to the media and everything else. But that's one thing he won't begrudge you, you know. Hey, the expectation is to be in the SEC championship game. The expectation is to win the SEC championship. The expectation is to be in the national championship picture, and that's what it's expected this year. You know, if you scan the nation everywhere, I get calls all the time, you know, from Seattle, Washington, from Arizona, from these different national radio shows wanting to talk about Georgia. You know, that wasn't always the case. You know, they all want to talk about Georgia. Tell us about Georgia. Tell us about Georgia. So that's where they are. You know, they're the Florida to the Alabama of old, you know, at the different times in the SEC history. You know, right now it's Georgia and Alabama. And, hey, you know, we need to enjoy this as long as that's the case. And I promise you, Kirby and that staff are busting it, trying to keep them up there, you know. And this is kind of a transition year, so we'll have to see after losing all that leadership if all that recruiting can replace it.
The big news from this past week was the big rule changes of the NCAA. All of a sudden now you go from a period of having to ask for permission to transfer. Now it's just simply notifying your intent to transfer. The redshirt rule is going to change here. You can play in up to four games and still count the season as a red shirt. This is going to take a lot of time for a lot of us to get used to here, but in sort of the early going here, how do you think this impacts UGA? You know, the obvious thing that comes to mind is that Justin Fields could play four games and still red shirt, put a little distance between himself and Jake Fromm, and yet I still sort of think that Fields plays in more than four games here in 2018. Do you think these new rules have a big impact on Georgia?
I did it, Brandon, and that's the most intriguing piece to me, is that the NCAA has built in some latitude from coaches, from an evaluation standpoint. You know, I really didn't see that as being part of this. Now, I always felt like and agreed with the fact that, you know, players in general need more freedom. You know, I mean, coaches can pick up and leave any minute they want to. That rule has been used to the benefit of schools for generations, not letting somebody transfer in the SEC. I love the fact that a graduate can go anywhere he wants to, because just like you or me, if we, matriculate and graduate with an undergraduate degree, then we're free to go anywhere we want to go. And that should extend to an athlete as well. But they've taken it farther than that. You know, as you know, you can get in there and let a player run out there and play in a couple of games and see whether he can, you know, for some of them, they're better when the lights come on. Some players don't necessarily practice real good, but you put them, you know, under the lights and in a situation, and all of a sudden there's another gear, you know, there's another dimension to their game. And, you know, Georgia's schedule setting up like it is, got a couple of softies in the first month, effectively, you know, this first 4 weeks can, be kind of a tryout period for a lot of these freshmen, and just all the stuff that we talked about where Georgia's having to replace, veteran experience with youth. That's a great scenario to have, where you can trot those guys out there and hey, get one-on-one with with the best receiver on that opposing team and see if you can hang. And I think it's extremely beneficial for Georgia. And I was really surprised that the NCAA went as far from one end of the spectrum to the other. But, that's the way the rules are. And I can promise you this, you know, Kirby and his staff, they're going to benefit, you know, from the rule. If there's an edge to be had, you know, they're going to seek it. And I expect Georgia to take full advantage of this new legislation.
Should be fascinating to see how it plays out. Chip, thanks for your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you have a great week. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at dognation.com, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Pretty interesting stuff there from Chip Towers weighing in on those new NCAA rules. I think this is a kind of a fascinating new landscape. I am, for the most part, pro-player. I think these rules benefit players, and therefore I'm for that. I mean, you know, it has always been confusing to me why the NCAA sort of wants to be so heavy-handed when it comes to the notion of eligibility. I mean, I just think that we make the lives for young men, and if you want to talk about women's sports, young ladies, we make the lives for these people better by giving them a chance to sort of further their athletic career. Why would we strangle that opportunity? That has never made any sense to me, and by we, I mean collectively as a society. Why would we do that? You know, this just seems to be a kind of a no-brainer, and it's kind of funny. You know, you really don't find much in the way of disagreement with these new rules, which I guess goes to show you they were sort of a long time, you know, past due here, the fact that so many people seem to like them. All right, time for the SEC through here. Of course, hope you'll check out SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon on the SEC Country video channels. One of the things we're going to get into, this is pretty fascinating. Les Miles goes on a Houston radio show. And, you know, the context of this can be a little bit difficult to decipher, but the best I can tell, virtually unprompted, goes into what almost feels like a bit of a shot maybe at Ed Orgeron. You know, he's asked about LSU and then kind of pivots that question to what Miles seems to believe is Orgeron asking for patience from LSU fans about the upcoming season. Now, I follow what every SEC coach, for the most part, says. I haven't really heard a lot of what apparently Les Miles thinks he's heard. You know, I guess there's one interpretation of the of Orgeron asking for patience that was maybe asking for... It's hard to really know exactly what Miles thinks about this, But Miles is going in on Orgeron here about asking for patience, saying that, you know, if you need patience, it's almost like you want a security blanket. It's almost like you want a safety net, and that maybe you're not, I mean, the insinuation here is you're not tough enough to handle things at LSU. It is a really aggressive approach by Les Miles. Now, it is not, you know, too difficult to read between the lines here. Maybe Miles feels like he was, you know, somewhat maybe stabbed in the back is too strong of a phrase, but he brought in Ed Orgeron as a defensive line coach, and then you blink your eyes, and Orgeron's the interim coach. They're firing Les Miles. So maybe Miles has some bitterness about that, but this is a pretty interesting line of thought here from Les Miles. He is clearly not happy with everything that Ed Orgeron has recently said as LSU coach. I'm not quite sure the exact quote that sets him off here, but the fact that he has been set off in and of itself is kind of interesting. So we'll have more on that coming up on SEC Country Live later on. I thought that Chip Towers said something really interesting when he was on Dog Nation Daily with us a couple of minutes ago. We'll probably spend some time on this tomorrow. He talked about the perception of Georgia's schedule maybe being tougher than it actually is. Actually, the opposite of that. The Georgia's schedule may actually be tougher than the perception of it based on the quarterbacks that Georgia plays. Chip mentioned, you know, the two quarterbacks from Missouri and South Carolina, Drew Locke and Jake Bentley. Another quarterback that might be said for, though, is Joe Burrow, the recent Ohio State transfer there at LSU. I saw where Ohio State coach Urban Meyer had some nice things to say about Joe Burrow recently, saying he'll always be a Buckeye and essentially wishing him well at LSU. I don't take a whole lot into the substance of what Meyer says there, other than you don't say nice things like that unless you're kind of a fan of Burrow. I get the impression that Meyer was kind of a fan. That's a crowded quarterback situation. They've named Dwayne Haskins as the starter at Ohio State. He is thought to be a tremendous prospect. Tate Martell, the backup, is also a pretty good prospect, too. So there are a lot of good quarterbacks at Ohio State. Maybe just not room for Joe Burrow, but that doesn't mean that Burrow's not a good player. All of a sudden, that's another potentially good quarterback that Georgia has to face here in 2018. It's kind of interesting that Urban Meyer was saying some good things about him recently. That's a guy that would know him well, and the rest of the SEC, including Georgia, will find out what Burrow is all about once he starts practicing this summer, and then once things get going, Georgia going to Baton Rouge there in October. Kind of interesting here, this is an NFL story, but there's a weird ESPN, or I should say SEC college football tie-in here. Let me see if I can get all this correct. Jory Epstein is a reporter reporting on the Dallas Cowboys, quoting Cowboys wide receiver Cole Beasley on brand new receivers coach Sanjay Law. Now, I don't know the first thing about Sanjay Law. I couldn't pick Jory Epstein out of a lineup. But what Epstein quotes Beasley as saying about Law is he really likes the new wide receivers coach. He says he feels like for the first time they're being taught how to run routes. Now, there's a lot of ways you can take that. By the time you get to the NFL, shouldn't you already know how to run routes? Maybe that's a reasonable question. But the obvious SEC tie-in here is that the old Cowboys receivers coach was new Missouri offensive coordinator Derek Dooley. And I believe it was just Friday's show when I was saying, once again, that I just think that Drew Locke's going to suffer a bit with Derek Dooley as his offensive coordinator. And I'm not saying that the Cole Beasley comment here is proof of that, but it's certainly interesting. It's proof of something anyway, that the current Cowboys wide receiver likes his new wide receivers coach better than the old one, and the old one now moved on to being an SEC offensive coordinator. As I've said before, anyone who's good enough to be a play caller is already a play caller. The fact that Derek Dooley is just now getting into that role sort of seems like more of a hint of desperation than a sense of, oh, we found a diamond in the rough, but nonetheless, we'll see where that goes. One of the things we'll also talk about later on today on SEC Country Live, this is a subject near and dear to Mike Johnson's heart. He's made a case before about the notion of the SEC playing a 9-game conference schedule. That's something that Adam Rittenberg, the ESPN writer, also recently discussed in the Feinbaum show. I think there's a lot to like with the notion of a 9-game SEC schedule. I think we're a long way from getting there. Coaches just don't like tougher schedules. Man, that's all there is to it. Coaches want easier schedules. The SEC coaches don't like playing other SEC teams more than they already have to. But this may be an idea whose time has come. We'll do that coming up later on today on SEC Country Live. For now, though, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I want to tell you a funny story. So one of the things I like about this time of year is it's like that one time where you know, you can kind of get away a bit on the weekends. You know, now Jeff's still doing a lot of recruiting stuff on the weekends, but for the most part, the schedule kind of slows down just a bit. You know, you can take your wife and kids to the zoo, for instance. Well, on Saturday, that's exactly what we did. My wife, who is also very busy day to day, week to week, kind of hopefully slows down a bit during the summer. And we said, hey, let's get the kids together. Let's go to the zoo. We're walking around the zoo, and lo and behold, guess who we see there? This is a true story. It's completely unplanned. If you follow Jeff Sintel on Twitter, you may have, you know, seen some evidence yourself. We bump into the Sintel family at the zoo. And you see, if you're watching on video, you can see this. If you're on audio, I apologize for the video you can't see here. But check out Jeff Sintel on Twitter. I also kind of retweeted the same thing. Jeff Sintel writes, so this was totally unplanned. Check out the Hawaiian shirt on this guy I met on a train just now near Critter Crossing. That's at Zoo Atlanta. So Jeff Sintel, his family, my family, we're there at the zoo together. But the one thing that many of you commented on after seeing this picture, and by the way, once again, if you're watching the podcast or listening to the podcast or listening on the radio, go check out either me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter or Jeff at Jeff Sintel on Twitter. A lot of you commented about the Hawaiian shirt, that somehow the Hawaiian shirt was not the best fashion choice. Now, here's what I will admit, and then I'll take some comments from you. Hawaiian shirts are sort of a good choice for fat guys. And at this point in time, I am certainly more in the fat guy category than not. But some of you act like, you know, the Hawaiian shirt's like not in style anymore. I bought that shirt at a major department store. I bought that at a major department store this summer. I used to wear Hawaiian shirts a lot. I hadn't worn them in a while. I saw some on the racks this summer. I bought a couple of those things. So that's our Dog Day Q&A question today. Do you like Hawaiian shirts? If you're female, either on the gentleman in your life, or if you're a male in terms of what you like to wear, for yourself. John T. Wynn says it's a little Magnum P.I. look. Listen, for those of you old enough to remember Magnum P.I. for the 80s, I'd give anything if it was... if it was truly a Magnum P.I. look, because that means I'm as handsome as Tom Selleck. I think we're a long way from me being Tom Selleck there, but I appreciate that. Alvin Todd said clearance rack. It doesn't look that bad, does it? That doesn't look like a clearance rack shirt. You like it? Our very young, hip, cool producer, Michael Shalaba, actually likes it. He gives it a thumbs up there. Joshua Bedlam Grosh says Hawaiian shirts are great. Yeah, so, I mean, I used to wear them a lot. Dylan Williams has kind of a Miami Vice look. Once again, if only I was as handsome as Don Johnson or Philip Michael Thomas, that's probably not a handsome look I can pull off. Galen Jacob says, if it was a UGA shirt, I'd give it a pass, but it's blue and white. Come on, man. I guess, you know, in the summer, I like the idea of wearing summer stuff. I've told you before, I like summer clothes. So nonetheless, you want to hit me up on Twitter about this at Dog Nation Daily? Many of you already have. That's the whole reason why we're talking about it right now. You can do that. We'll also take more of your comments here on video today as well. For now, though, let's get ready to wrap up today's show. And if it's a Hawaiian shirt, at least it's not blue and orange, right? That would be certainly a no-go there. And speaking of the Florida Gators, you know, we do it every day at this time because we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. It's our Gator hater countdown. 131 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Florida, beats the Gators again in Jacksonville, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It's our Gator Hater Countdown every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I'm really excited about this upcoming week, by the way. We've got a really cool thing we're doing on Thursday. Now, when Jeff's on the show tomorrow, we got to talk more about this. He and I are actually going to speak together to the Bulldog Club in Augusta, Georgia on Thursday. Now, Jeff knows more about the details of this than I do, but we're really looking forward to being in Augusta on Thursday. Let Jeff tell you more about this, but it's a chance for us to kind of get out of Atlanta a bit. Looking forward to that. Seeing you tomorrow also right here on Dog Nation Daily.